Have you seen like where like the room that the Mona Lisa's inside? There's like all of these other gore. It's like this tiny ass fucking painting. And there's all these other gorgeous works of art in the same fucking room. And it's like you go out, you go out to the next fucking room. There's a Mona Lisa dedicated gift shop, and you look up, and there's even more like insane works of art hanging above them. And I'm like, fuck the Mona Lisa. Yakuta is fine.
No,
it's like the most whelming thing ever.
I mean last episode they made a fat joke where he like ate a bunch of sweets and turned into the fucking fat kid from
That's 24 episodes. I'm gonna kill myself.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
God damn it, Lex.
It's the most fucking like battle shonen bullshit. Battle shonen, it's never bullshitted.
Angsty, angry main character kid, and all these like no.
And I'm like, who likes this show? And everyone's like, it's okay.
Okay, I mean,
it's like I don't hate the show. I'm not gonna fucking like commit genocide on the staff that made it, but I don't want to watch it. But,
yeah, same like something like Yaiba. I'm more comfortable like that being like, okay, I'm willing to stick around two cores for that. Just. On the animation alone, whereas Gachiyakuta looks fine, but like I don't care about the characters. The character designs are cool, but I mean, it's all that the show looks insane.
Yaiba encapsulates like a time period.
Yeah.
It is very eighties, nineties battle shonen, silly, wacky.
Yeah, monster of the week.
Gachiyakuta is like almost. It almost feels like cynically shonen.
You know, like modern, like shonen, like the darker, edgier stuff, like Jujutsu Kaisen or Chainsaw Man, but more calculated feeling.
No, I mean, like, it takes that, like the Jujutsu Kaisen Chainsaw Man, like dark edginess, and then incorporates that with the stupid slapstick bullshit of like Demon Slayer. And I'm just like,
No.
But at least it's not as bad as that one blood one this season. That we dropped after one episode.
Blood?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Togenonki? I did not watch a single episode of that.
You're better for it.
I was not there, and then you guys like were like, no, it's no. No. I'm like, okay, cool. I won't even watch the first episode then.
I'm not even okay. I haven't liked Sakamo Days Part 2. But the last episode was like, okay.
No time. I need to watch Kaiju number 8, part 2. That one I'm like more excited for, just because I like Kaiju number 8 a fair amount.
But... And I can feel pretty secure in the fact that it's not that I hate shonen, because I am really enjoying Dandadan this season.
No, Dandadan is wonderful, yeah.
Dandadan is fucking... I was talking about this like while it was airing yesterday.
It's such a weird show to like explain to people, because there isn't really like... much of a structure or overarching plot or goal apart from get the kids' balls back.
Yeah, it's not like a thing you can just point to.
They haven't had the scene, and this is like, I feel like it's gonna have to do that, the scene at some point where like they get recruited into an organization, you know what I mean? Like
there's no battle shonen arc, like a fucking test or something, the shonen exam.
No, yeah, they haven't.
Sakamoto
done, like,
Days is currently doing the shonen exams, by the way. Yeah, they're in the forest of death right now.
Oh, literally. So it's literally there's a shonen exams.
Yeah, they're in teams of three, in a forest.
Oh my fucking god!
And they have
no fucking way. You're lying to me.
No, they have to get. They're doing the tail tag thing, where like you put a piece of paper as a tail. And your different color or whatever. So you have to get that color from, and your team has to have like two colors or something, or to pass the next round. They're doing that right now in Sakamoto Days.
All right.
I was talking about this yesterday. You were correct that there's not like a thing you can point to in Dandadan where you're like, oh, he wants to become the king of the pirates. He wants to become the Hokage. But it is more character driven they're like, the characters have more agency than like any other battle shonen I've seen in a while, like that I can think of offhand.
Well, like the clearer through line there is like the relationship between Okarun and Momo. That's like the through line through all of the arcs, essentially, is like the romance aspect, which is really weird.
Like, for a battle shonen?
It's not like something. Yeah, that's not something you see in an action anime, really.
No, not often. Like, no,
even something like Mob Psycho had like the Claw organization, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're not like just the whole show for Dandadan has not been like them trying to fight the aliens. Just kind of like, oh, they're just going about their lives, and then something happens.
It's interesting because like something will happen to them. They help the kid in the beginning of this season. They're helping the kid with his fucking problem in his house. And then then leads, like, you know, Cavill spirals into like this whole thing.
They have to fight the giant worm. Oh God, he's been possessed by like a death god.
Yeah, like that stuff that happens to them, and then they stop and reclaim that, and then push for like the story that moves forward through agency. Where like the last,
it's almost closer to something like Monogatari in that regard.
Yeah, yeah, I can see it. Because like I was thinking about this, like, because the whole fight in the last episode was purely because Okarun wanted to do something. Like, that was a choice that he was making. It was not something he had to do. There was an option where it's like, okay, well, we could do this and it would be solved just as well or whatever. It's just not going to be to y'all's preference or whatever. But he's like, oh, I'm going to do this because this is how I want to do it, in a way that will make me feel like I have accomplished multiple things, like helping you in the way I want to help you, and then doing something that means something for myself, kind of thing. So it's purely agency driven. And that's not something you really see in a lot of battle shonen. Cause like,
no, again, that's what I mean in terms of like, when they, if they ever get to the point where they're like, they introduce the organization, like they get recruited in, that's kind of like where they lose that agency, essentially. Cause now they're on assignments. They're doing,
well, it's
missions,
not even that.
You know?
Like, even if you look at like a Dragon Ball or something, Dragon Ball's always drug the characters through like the next problem, right? There's a Vegeta coming, and you have to train for the Vegeta, and then they beat the Vegeta. The Vegeta goes and is like, oh, I'm gonna go tell the Frieza. Then you got the Frieza, then you gotta defeat the Frieza. Like, there's always something that's like not letting you have your own agency. You have to go do something about it,
right? Yeah. Something is invading from outside the story,
right? Naruto is the same way, where it's like, they're doing missions, and then like there's an invasion of the village, and then they have to find a new Hokage. They have to stop this kid from being kidnapped.
You're explaining to me how like it just keeps doing the whole like, oh, the real villain has revealed himself.
Yeah, at the end, it literally like within the last like 100 chapters, it does like 4 times or something. they don't have like that agency like this. Like, this is like, it's weird because it feels slow because it has character agency going on. Like, it's just focused on the characters. It's not like, oh, we had to do this thing because the world's going to end. It's all very reasonable in scope, which is something pretty unique.
There hasn't really been like a power creep or anything going on.
Well, so that's another interesting, like, they do have like a training arc, quote unquote. But it's not based around like a power system. Like, I guess you could technically be like, you have like people that are more spiritually adept than other people, so that could be a power system, quote unquote. There are stronger anomalies or whatever, but the way that he gains power is through like rhythm and just finding his own rhythm, essentially.
Okay.
Which is, when you say it out loud, it's very obvious what they're doing, right? It's not a matter of just getting stronger. It's like finding your own pace, becoming your like best self as who you are. Don't follow like someone else's pace. Don't go to someone else's rhythm. Find your own rhythm and then find your strength in that.
There's not really anything I can think of, at least off the top of my head, that is really like Dandadan, especially in the realm of like action shonen. Like, This is just not how you make these kinds of stories, generally speaking.
No. And that's like, not to say, mind you, that's not to say that, like, oh, this is, like, the best because it does this, and, like,
no,
somebody Chainsaw no, Man no. is terrible because Denji has no agency. Like, that is the story Chainsaw Man is telling. That's fine. It's just that it's an interesting breath of fresh air with Don to Don that it is doing this in a way that we don't see Battle Shonen do it.
Right. I look at it and I kind of go, huh. It doesn't really feel like a Kaiju number 8 or anything.
And even like the anime staff feel like they're having fun with it. Like the last episode, not the most recent. Was it the last episode or was it the episode before that? No, two episodes before. Whenever they go to the maid cafe. Mm-hmm. That the directing in that was so fucking good for no reason. Like, because you get Okuru going to this maid cafe, and it's like, does this like point POV shot where he's like looking around, being all awkward and shit, like, because he doesn't want to look at fucking Momo, who's also feeling awkward because she's in a fucking maid outfit, because she didn't know that's what she was going to be doing, essentially. And then, like, they do a whole shot where it's like a music sequence, which also very subtly bookends the end of the episode. Because, like, the sequence is to her, I think, to like Beethoven, if I remember right. It could have been Chopin. Either way, it's a piano piece by a composer, as she's like working her job, and it's kind of going through the monotony of like she's doing these things, repetitive things over and over and over again that she doesn't want to do, and she keeps looking at the clock and it's like 5 minutes have passed, 7 minutes have passed. She's like, what the fuck. And that bookends the end of the episode, which revealed that there's like these ghosts taunting the music room, playing the piano.
Okay.
But it's a way that you wouldn't like, obviously you're not going to like be like, oh, they're going to obviously go and fight some music ghosts. But like, when you look back at it, it's like, oh, okay, there was like an intentionality there that maybe you won't give credit to unless you're just going to look at it on that kind of level.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was great. The fucking they have a really great sense of direction, as far as like how to add stakes to their story, because like you said, the driving thing of the story is Okuru and Momo's relationship.
Yeah,
and so you get Okuru meeting her at the fucking thing, and he's like, "Oh, it's dangerous for girls to walk home alone. I'll walk with you." And she's like, "No, I can protect myself," kind of thing, which then primes you subconsciously. For when later on they have her be targeted by what is the fucking called, Evil Eye or whatever, they evoke like the SA imagery of being like violated, and Okuru is like forced, like is unable to like do anything about it because like he's like locked out or whatever, and that was primed, you were primed for that with that scene where it's like a very mundane, like, oh, I'm just going to help walk you home just to protect you or whatever, because it's just dangerous for girls. And then it does the sex A imagery. And it's like, oh, that's what they were kind of priming you for. And they're grounding it in this very like tangible, real thing where you can feel the like how violated you would feel for Okuru'n, where he's like, I cannot do anything. Like the pure frustration and how that would make you feel in that kind of position. Cause they have primed you for that kind of mentality. They're very good at doing that kind of thing in a way that I don't see a lot in Battle Shonen. It's more common recently. Cause like, obviously you get stuff like Chainsaw Man that's dealing with like darker themes,
right.
And Jujutsu Kaisen stuff, but like, they don't really do it on that level. Where it's just so intrinsically tied to like this kind of visual thing. But yeah, it has a lot of things. I feel like I still like Jujutsu Kaisen season 2 more because of that whole stint was just like, what the fuck? How are you still the going? Whole,
like Gojo background thing.
Gojo background?
Is that not what happens in season 2?
I don't know what Gojo background means.
As in like his backstory?
Oh, that happened. Yeah. No, I mean, like the Shinjuku art where like it basically is like everything just fucking like goes to shit. And like it's just like a constant cavalcade of shit where like the end of it, basically the entire city of Shinjuku is like a crater essentially. but visually and like by stakes, because you're engaging it as a battle shonen, right? Like you're like, oh, nothing bad's going to happen or whatever. That's just going to be irreversible. And like things keep happening and you keep like, well, they can't do more. Oh, they can't do more than that. Like it just keeps happening. And the visuals keep going, ramping up with them, where like the cuts toward the end are like in fucking insane. You're like, how are you doing this after you were already making insane cuts like 15 episodes ago? So like I appreciate that, I think, as an experience more. But like a moment to moment basis, Donadon has eclipsed Jujutsu Kaisen and like Chainsaw Man for me. It just hasn't had like the big moments yet of like a Shinjuku arc or
it does ramp up, especially with like the Evil Eye stuff, but yeah. Well, and it's, well, like, it does kind of beg the, because like in order to do something like that though, it feels like you need to have like a broader structure in order to build up to that. Mm-hmm. And that's not like,
it makes it
that
easier.
Would almost be like a,
I don't think it necessarily, like, I'm just speaking more toward, like, I need, like, a big emotional pathos payoff moment. Not necessarily, like, sure, I need, like, the world to end kind of thing. I don't need, like, a scale thing. I need, like, a impact thing. Jujutsu Kaisen just happened to do that with the scale and, like, destruction and people dying or whatever. But that's not necessarily the only way to do that, obviously. But, like, Dandadan is only, what, 18 episodes in, like
the about something like that.
Like it's we're not having even reached like the end of season one of Jujutsu Kaisen yet. So it's got a lot of time. It's just weird to compare it to, because like I just think of like Jujutsu Kaisen season one as its own thing and season two is its own thing. And you kind of try to do that with Dandadan, but Dandadan's only 12 episode seasons as opposed to 26. So it's like, it's a weird comparison to make. Yeah, I've enjoyed Dandadan. It's not my favorite show this season, despite the fact how much I talked about it. There's been the good stuff this year, or the good stuff this season, is really good. Just everything else that was not quite on that level has kind of been like, I don't know. You like Rory Rocks a lot more than I do, so.
That's true. Rory Rocks might be my anime of the year. Maybe? We'll have to see. Every episode has been, like, enthralling for me, so. We'll see how it goes. Like, it is hitting harder for me, like, on an emotional level than, like an Apocalypse Hotel, even. Which is very surprising. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not feeling anything from Rory Rocks.
This is I was thinking about it earlier. I'm like, oh, this is like a reverse of Zenshu, basically, where you're getting a lot out of it, and I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. It's like you want to get the most out of everything. And it's like the stuff that y'all talk about, I see it, it's there. I'm like, yeah. Yeah. It's just it doesn't like resonate with me emotionally. So I was just like, it'll stop me from saying the show is bad, but it's not really helped me think it's good either. It's just kind of like,
I'll talk about it more. Also, I'm just now seeing the wonderful drawing of the hungry caterpillar in Bonnie. that's actually, I thought it was just going to be like a shitty edit of like the hungry caterpillar, like in the show, like photoshopped into the show. That's like an actual drawing.
Someone drew it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were.
Someone put time and effort into that one.
That's cute.
What's going on with Dress Up Darling, though? How's that going for you?
So that's that's kind of like Dandadan in a way, where I'm really enjoying the moment-to-moment stuff.
It's a nerdy guy getting with a gyaru.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. No, I'm really enjoying the like character interactions and the moment to moment stuff in My Dress Up Darling, but it's it doesn't have the same intellectual kind of thing that season one did for me.
Mm-hmm.
But season one, I'm like, I can get behind this stuff. I guess like it's still there. It's not that it's not there. It's
yeah,
just like,
yeah,
it's not a novel thing. It's just like, oh, okay, we're just doing more of it, right?
Right.
But it hasn't really mattered because I'm just so invested in Marin and Gojo as like characters and the relationship and dynamic. I'm just like, I'm having fun.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard season two is also like a production like step up from season one as
oh,
well.
Oh yeah, like there was was episode 6 or 7, I think, where there's a lot of direction with Gojo during this like school festival thing where he's like doing work for Marin. And there's a lot of shots of him kind of just like staring off into space, or like in this frame to make it look like he's doing that, like that show that kind of disconnect. And it's a very like subtle thing, but it was like, for me, it was very noticeable because I'm like, who the fuck is directing this? Like, this is actually like really fucking like good. What the fuck? And then there's like a lot of like animation cuts. So I'm just like, this is fucking insane. What are you doing?
All I know is I saw people posting around like what's basically Marin doing the nah, I'd win thing from Jujutsu Kaisen.
Nah, I'd win.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, fuck, I gotta finish season one still.
I think the thing that would make I think the thing that would make you catch up is if you saw the first episode of season two where she like bends over and her ass like gets bigger and you're just like, whoa, what the fuck?
Probably. I'll probably just watch it when it's all done, though. Just go through it.
But like all of it, or like season two?
Season two. Like, I'll probably just like wait for that to be done, especially because, like I was saying next season hopefully is a little bit more of a breather, because they also want to watch Yamato. If we can watch Yamato next season, then I'll probably also just be taking more time.
Yeah.
Just like watch stuff.
That'd be cool.
We're not going to be booked up watching like three, four episodes of anime every day. I've started to get better about watching anime on the train to work, because usually like I get like really train sick, especially if I'm doing that. But I figured out that if I don't eat or drink anything in the morning, I'm fine. If I don't like have any like an energy drink or like breakfast, and I just like get like something at the vending machine at work, then I'm fine. Yes, so
I've never experienced this.
Oh, you've never experienced being like car sick?
Never been car sick, never been train sick, never been seasick.
Really? That's interesting. I guess I've never really been seasick because I've never really gone out to sea.
I thought about this because like when I was on vacation, we went on a ferry.
Okay.
And I was like, I've been on boats, actually, now that I think about it. And I was like, but I never like thought about seasickness until like we were on that ferry, and I'm like, oh. Do I get seasick? And I'm like, no, I don't know how you do. I don't like, it's not like a thing of like, y'all are fucking weak. I don't know how the fuck. It's just more like, I just don't know. I don't know what the, like how it is that happens. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like such a foreign thing.
It's a very like nauseous feeling is how I describe it.
I understand like how it feels, like generally how it feels. I don't know. I don't understand how, like,
you've never experienced it specifically though.
I never experienced like the process of becoming that, to understand like where, what is it, like you're looking at the horizon or something and like that caused you to, like, I don't understand anything like that. You know what I mean?
I know. Well, that's the thing. It's not anything like that. I think it's just like the motion for me, especially like if I'm on the train and like the train is like doing this thing that it does sometimes, or it will start
and stop and
move forward like a few feet and then stop, start, and then hard stop and stop and hard stop. One, it's really fucking annoying, and two, that makes it worse,
churns you up.
Yeah,
the churning butter.
But it's like, I don't know, like a lot of the train is like underground, so I'm also not like it's not a matter of like, oh, like looking at the horizon or anything. It is just like a motion thing, which is weird. Yeah, and I would always get really car sick as well. Well, I mean, it's only really if I'm like on my phone or reading something or like playing a video game. If I'm just like not doing anything like that, then I'm perfectly fine, is the thing.
Yeah, skill issue.
Hello and welcome to the Weeb Crew. I think we started probably like 20 minutes ago or wherever I'm going to start this episode. I don't fucking know. I'm your host, Psyotic, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Moomy.
We've been talking a lot about anime. It's fine.
And this is an anime podcast. Isn't that what we're supposed to do?
People that get filtered by us talking about Dandadan for like 15 minutes.
Moomy, did you hear what Jimmy Refuse said on Twitter? Did you hear what Rev said on Twitter today? We got to talk about it.
What? I don't know what they... No, I fucking... I have not talked about... I fucking hate Twitter.
I saw you say that to someone the other day.
Yeah, well, it's a fucking, like, desolate wasteland of fucking ideas. Like...
Well, it's impossible to have, like, it's not a platform that is conducive to any sort of, like, actual conversation, specifically because of, like, how it's structured and, like, the different, like, reply chains and stuff.
Yeah, it's
like,
the performativity of
conversations.
It.
Oh, yeah, that too, because, like, it's also, like, a completely public platform, so you're just, like, you know.
You play to an audience, right? Like,
yeah,
there's
you're
a,
playing
there's
to an
a,
audience.
There's
yeah.
a level of performativity in, like, anonymous 4chan posting. I'm not going to say that there's not. Like, you are trying to sure. appeal in some level to, like, certain people, like the people that you want in your corner kind of thing. So like if
right.
someone were to read it or something, you might get someone who was on your side or something, you know, shit like that. It's devoid of it, but there's not yeah. like that pure level of just like tribalist appeal or whatever, where you just like, oh, I'm going to say the right thing, so this group of people will just agree with me. And then,
yeah, I'm going to give my recycled opinion on this topic because I have a blue check mark and it's the first of the month. Actually, have I paid my rent today? I need to hold on.
I gotta check, make sure I paid my rent.
I think I set it up for auto pay, so I think I'm good, but let me like double check that. I probably also need to pay like my electricity bill and stuff.
That'll determine what I post on Twitter next. If I paid my rent today. but no, I fucking hate, like, Twitter's such a fucking cesspit, because, like, there's no yeah, authenticity yeah. in it. Like, anonymous posting on 4chan, there is authenticity, because it's, like, just pure distilled, like, people's opinion in
you,
a lot of ways.
Well, that's the thing. You don't have, unless you're, like using a trip code, you don't have an identity to, like, a reputation, generally speaking. Sometimes you can figure out who the fuck someone is if they're, like...
This isn't me advocating.
Like identifiable.
This is not me advocating for like you should post on 4chan. That is not. I'm saying like I understand what people will say, like 4chan is a fucking shithole for discussion. I would much rather take that shithole than the shithole that is Twitter or X, and that has always been the case. The only reason we even have a Twitter is because we have a podcast. Like I would.
Yeah.
The only reason that account is active is because you're on it. I had that account for probably 2 years, year and a half before I just was like, you should just use it. Cause like, I'd never use it. Cause it's a fucking shithole. And like, all the discussions you get in, I get all the like notifications. Like I don't get like push notifications, but like I'll see like the discussions you're having. I'm like, wow, this is fucking garbage. This is a waste
no,
of time.
I would lose my mind if I was using the app and had to get notifications on my phone. Why is my email? I have an email here saying I got a perishable delivery on August 23rd. Well, I don't know what that could be.
It probably perished.
Yeah, it's almost certainly gone bad by now, but I don't know what is it? What would that be? What did I order? I haven't ordered anything. Let me check my Amazon. Hold on. Hi, welcome to the Weave Crew. We just do our personal finances on the podcast. What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm having a discussion. I'm talking about anime shit, and you're like over here like, fucking the UPS like, post office.
What did I fucking... Hold on. Let me check my Amazon.
See, that
would
have been a very funny like transition into like a sponsor if we had one.
Oh, yeah. No, like, I got like the fucking... That was... It wouldn't be the melatonin because that's the 26th and this is on the 23rd. I don't know. I'll go down to the front desk later and be like, hey, did something die? Did I lose something?
Did something
I wasn't
perish?
Expecting a package. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck I would have ordered.
I don't know either. I'm not.
This is like legitimately bothering me, and it's gonna fuck up the entire podcast now. Oh yeah, I was supposed to like pay my rent. Yeah, that's what I was doing, right?
Oh my god.
Your next rent payment is okay. Let's see here. Okay, no, so we're good. I think yeah, my rent's been paid. Thank God. You know, we are the Weave Crew advocate paying your rent on time, setting up an auto pay preferably. Yeah, you wouldn't know. You don't pay rent.
No, I have car payments though. I mean, I have bills to pay.
There we go. I don't have car payments because I don't have a car.
Got car payments, got insurance, got, well, I don't have
health. Do we have an idea for what we were going to talk about this episode?
Yeah, we can talk about Moe performativity.
Did watch Lars and the Real Girl last night.
Alternatively, we could just talk about just reflecting on favorites in general.
What do you mean?
We'd have to work through it.
What?
I don't know. I've been doing a lot of just reflection on favorites and threads through favorites.
Threads through? Wait, what do you mean?
Like,
here, we'll stuff. Do it. We'll do a therapy session. Let's. So I'll be the psychologist. Well, let's do some role playing. Okay, I'll be the psychologist, and you'll. Yeah, you're the patient. Okay. So what do you mean threads?
Are you licensed for this?
No, absolutely. I'm not even. I don't even have a boating license. I'm not registered as like a minister or anything. I have, if anything, negative qualifications. Given that I have a reputation for being fucking rude, but you know, continue.
So I was thinking like threads as far as like what kind of like overarching thing is going on in my favorites. Cause like, I remember fucking back in the day, Trixie made that video where she's like, things going on. And I think it's very stupid to like,
she said like, I like things that are like very dense that have a lot of things going on. And it's like, what the fuck does that? That's like so fucking nebulous.
So I was thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like, could there be like deeper themes that maybe you could pick up on as far as like a sample of your favorites? Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been spending my time doing is like that through not just like anime but like manga and music and shit like that.
Do you think there's a danger there though that if you end up like figuring out some sort of through line that you almost feel obligated to conform to it in some way?
Not necessarily. I think it would be more like helpful in terms of like finding things. If you kind of have like an idea of what the core sort of emotional thing that you're kind of resonant for, then you can look for that as opposed to like more surface level things like a genre or characters or, you know, something like something more like dealing with and like how is it dealing with it in a way that I might be able to like look for something that does something similar.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think I have something like that in terms of like, I like things that are like, have like very big, like emotional moments, very like humanist, almost like universalist kinds of themes, very like good natured and ultimately like positive, I'd say, generally speaking. There are some exceptions. But things like that are like the things that like attract me most. Like, you're not going to necessarily see a ton of like action in my favorites overall. You're not going to see just a ton of like very low key, like Iyashike type stuff really. Cause it's not really the stuff that like resonates with me the most. I don't know if that's really ever helped me find stuff though, as much as it's just kind of been like, I'm a fundamentally very selective, unpicky person when it comes to watching it. I'm like, I'll fucking watch whatever. I'm watching Trinity 7 right now. It's getting better, I guess. It's not very good still, but I'm enjoying it somewhat. I'm not like as annoyed with it. But, you know, I think that's also just kind of like the joy of it is like just, you know, watching whatever, putting on something and just being very surprised by it. Because you're not really going in with any sort of expectations.
So what I've kind of been toying with is the idea of my favorites kind of dealing with impermanence. And sort of like dealing with impermanence as far as like either be accepting of it or challenging it or like in different ways in general, like, you know, Fully Cooley or and Sunny or White Box or something, like deal with the impermanence of childhood and growing up. Then obviously like Evangelion, Technolize, even some element of Pun deals with like apocalypticism kind of thing,
or if anything, like Aria the Origination is probably the entry that deals the most with that concept, it feels like, because that's like the one where like it feels like everyone's like really like growing up and moving on and stuff and going like down their own paths in life. I don't know how the fuck that ties into like Legend of Galactic Heroes beyond like
it's like broad, it's like grand idea, like, because Legend of Galactic Heroes and even like Steel Ball Run and Gurren Lagann to some extent are like grand ideals and larger than life sort of things, kind of like colliding with the impermanence of time. Like Legend of Galactic Heroes, Reinhardt tries to accomplish all these things, but then is ultimately only able to do so much and like is kind of just a footnote in history in some regards, right? Like, kind of that sort of contradiction and like dealing with the impermanence of things. It's something like, because I was very critical of it when it was like, oh, there are a lot of things going on. I'm like, that's really fucking stupid.
Well, because it's not a bad idea to like look at things like that and be very introspective. But if that's the conclusion you come to, it just makes you sound very up your own ass.
Like you don't really know what you're looking at, essentially.
Yeah, it's just I like things that are good. It's like, don't we all?
So like I'm not saying that is like the through line of my favorite. It's just more like I'm toying with like, is that a potentiality for it kind of thing, you know, like trying to figure out what themes kind of do resonate with me and like why, because like something like I could point to like Evangelion and like Eureka 7 and they might have similar things, but one of them resonated with me and one didn't, right? Same with like Madoka and like Nanoha, I guess. Like one resonates, one doesn't. And it's kind of deconstructing like why these things that kind of have similar premises or even similar staff or similar sort of ethos to their production, why one works for me and one doesn't. And so it's just been me kind of just going through like my general favorites. Not even necessarily like this is my favorite thing ever, but like things I enjoy. Cause like, I feel like that might be more revealing in a way, like, especially with like music. Cause like the stuff I would say about my favorite albums are like stuff I like the full album of, and are things I appreciate like on a deeper level than just
as like an album as a whole, essentially.
Correct.
Like
there are things going on that I can appreciate instrumentally or, core, like just whatever, right? Like on a technical level.
Yeah. When the first song of the album and the last song of the album have the same melody, I'm like, ah, oh, that's cinema right there. That's what we call an easy way. That's what we call an easy way to make an album seem coherent.
But like looking at the stuff that has stuck with me, I guess, because like obviously, you listen to stuff as a kid that then becomes like the comfort food of music. Cause it's like, this is the stuff I'm just used to. I don't think about when I put it on, like, it's just there. So like when I look at stuff like that, that kind of then can help me highlight the things that are resonate for me in other things. Right. Cause like, they're not like, these are not necessarily the examples of things that are like the most, the highest level of like execution, but they speak to me on like a level, right? Like kind of like something like a Girls Dead Monster or something, right? Very rough, very like I would not ever call them like my favorite band by any means, but like there is a charm to them that I keep coming back to that album for. And so when I kind of deconstruct like what it is about that, that I kind of resonates with me and like the roughness, the rawness, what it is kind of like tackling as far as like ideas or like what it evokes emotionally, and then compare that to like my other favorites, like even something like No Country for Old Men or something. You can start kind of like seeing some connections, like even if it's like a small, like tangential one, right? Yeah, there's not a lot in common with A Girl's Dead Monster and No Country for Old Men.
No,
but they both are kind of dealing with like that. And that could be like a cop out thing, like the impermanence, because like what doesn't deal with impermanence on some level, the way you frame it, right? Because like No Country for Old Men is about what the ideals of morality and like longing for simpler times and all that, and then
Sazae-san, because it will never fucking end. It will be here forever.
It'll be here forever. Long after I'm dead, Sazae-san will continue.
people have like been born, lived full lives, had kids, and died while watching Sazae-san every week.
Yeah,
it's a crazy thought.
Tragically short lives, but yeah.
Well, yeah, relatively short, but still,
it's a tragedy if someone dies and they're like 30, right?
See, no, that's the real impermanence of life. You will die someday.
You will die someday.
What's the Japanese term people use to make themselves sound awari? What the fuck is the term? You know what I'm talking about, right?
I feel like I do, but I'm also thinking of omoiwa shinderu or ichinamida or
man.
Awari da. It's so over.
No, not Muja. What the fuck? Mono no aware.
Mono no aware.
Yeah, you've heard that term before, right?
Yes. I don't know.
Yeah, it's translated as the pathos of things or an empathy towards things. It's a Japanese idiom for the awareness of impermanence or transience of things, and both a transient gentle sadness or wistfulness as their passings, as well as a longer deeper gentle sadness about the state of being, the reality of life. This state of being the reality of life. I read that from Wikipedia.
Well, shit.
Yeah, I'm surprised you have not heard of this before.
Mono no aware.
No, you have to make the fucking video now and just say that.
The Japanese concept of mono no aware.
Mono no aware is about the lack of an individual self-awareness in social situations because they're really fucking autistic.
Well, aesthetically, like all my favorites kind of conform to this sort of melancholy, I would say. Even something like
I'd say mine are
Gurren Lagann.
I'd say mine are generally more like uplifting, like a Planetese or even like a Monster, or like there's like a bittersweetness to something like Angel's Egg. Mm-hmm. But then I don't like, or like a Evangelion, but then like,
well, that's why I think it's interesting to like, I guess,
is anyone gonna argue Tokyo Godfathers is not a happy movie?
I mean, they're homeless. I guess you could.
Yeah, but there's a very happy ending there. It's also like, you know.
I think this is why it matters to like look at like a collection or like a vertical slice as opposed to like a singular thing. Because I feel like a singular show could almost fit into just about anything. But when you look at it as like a trend as far as like 10 shows, that says something different than if you looked at it alongside 10 other shows or something. Because, like, I feel like you could say, like, Angel's Egg is depressing, or you could say it's uplifting, depending on, like, kind of the context of what's around it.
Yeah. Especially because that movie is, like, that movie's very open to interpretation.
Yeah.
That's like, very much like a movie, like, you get out what you put into it. But even, like, there's stuff that's more like overtly bittersweet, like a Co-Colors or Spring and Chaos, Jinro, Technolize. These are all very sad, depressing things. Shishinkan, even. Pat Labor 2. Pat Labor 2 is very much about impermanence on several levels.
Yeah.
You were talking about Pat Labor 2 the other day and how fucking insane that movie is to just, like, everything just, like, clicks together so well. It's insane.
Fucking great. It's the greatest movie.
Yeah, it's okay. We should watch Pat Labor 2 sometime.
Yeah, I'm down.
Wait a minute.
I need to still watch the OVAs, the new files. Is that what it was?
Oh, the new files. Yeah, yeah. We're getting a new Pat Labor. I think it's supposed to be a TV show coming soon.
Something. We got a Pat Labor Digimon. Or no, Zoids crossover. That's what it was.
Pat Labor Zoids or Digimon and Zoids?
No. Pat Labor and Zoids.
Okay.
They made a Pat Labor dog. I think it's supposed to be like a German Shepherd. Aww. Police dog.
That would make sense.
But it also could be a wolf. It's hard to tell. It's a fucking Zoid.
Let me see. Hold on. I mean, why would it be a wolf? Like, that's the police dog.
But do they have police dogs in Japan?
I would imagine, right?
But if they do, it's like, is it the same police dog as we have in America?
It's a little pup. It's like a little like Shiba.
It's a Shiba Inu.
Yeah. Japanese police dog. They have maybe the Akita.
That makes sense.
It looks like they also have, looks like it's like, yeah, probably either like an Akita or German Shepherd.
Yeah, like I said, it's like it's Zoid, so it's like,
yeah,
it's hard to tell exactly what it is.
It is canine in form.
Canine-esque.
And that's what we can discern about it. Yes. It has like wings.
I will say I was thinking about this because we watched, and we can use this as a springboard to start talking about Lars and the Real Girl, but we watched that last night.
Okay. Yeah.
And they were talking about like, oh, everyone's favorite word is their name. And I'm like, is that like a thing?
That's like, you know, that's like something like my dad, like, yeah,
but it's not like, there is like some truth to it in the sense that like typically people do like the sound of their own name, and so that's like a, that's like a, that's not my name. So there's like a psychology
that's not
to
my
like
name.
There is a psychology to like say someone's name to like,
yeah,
increase the affirmation, affection points or whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, you're listening, right? So and such. And it was like, oh, yes, you said my name. I feel seen.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it because, like, I don't feel that way. Mm-hmm. Like, there's actually, like, a weird disconnect for me.
I feel like it's because you also have a really stupid name.
I don't have a stupid name. Shut the fuck up. I do like my name. Like, it's not like I dislike it. Which that would make more sense, yeah, if I did dislike my name.
Yeah, if you had like a really bad name, if you were named like Mirror or
Cornelius
something.
Winklebottom the Fifth Esquire, fucking, like whatever. Yeah,
my name, my parents named me Grass.
Grass. Like
your parents were fucking like deadheads in the 80s, weren't they?
Yeah, like that would make more sense, but like I guess maybe it's I've spent so much time in like anonymous spaces that like, yeah, it seems like a lot of the time it feels very like awkward to hear my own name. Like my actual name, not Moomy, but
yeah. we'll say that Moomy is your real name for this contact
for reference.
It's what you're telling people. Someone's listening being like, it's not,
your name's not Moomy.
Fuck? Why?
I thought you were born in 2012 and you're just named after the meme.
It's even it's weirder for me because like I go by several different names online depending on the like the space that I'm in and who I'm talking to. So it's like that happens even less for me. I mean, my association with like someone saying my name is I'm in a Teams call at work and someone says my name and I'm like, oh fuck, I wasn't paying attention. Fuck. Wait, what? Fuck, god damn it.
Fuck.
So I associate someone saying my name with pain and panic.
Pain and panic. No, because like even like more intimate context, like it feels awkward to hear my name. Like it doesn't feel natural. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like forced. Like, oh, like I don't know, my friends and stuff in real life will, you know, obviously say my name. They don't call me fucking Moomy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel weird there. It doesn't feel weird with like my parents or my brothers.
Right.
But just like in general, it feels weird. And I feel like thinking about mm-hmm. it, I feel like I've had like a very distinct separation of identity as far mm-hmm. as like why I don't like to talk about anime and stuff at work.
Yeah.
And I guess like share that side of myself in that setting. So like I just generally have this weird separation of like needs, I guess, where I have like created two separate distinct things I need like separate needs for, and I don't look for both of those needs in one setting.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a relationship,
you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of, are you familiar with how the Japanese say you have three faces?
I only got two faces, all right?
I only got two faces.
I'm always somewhat duplicitous. I don't have three faces.
I feel like that's most people, but most people are also not like as online as us, so it's like less of
there's a distinction in between like just different like masks you wear as far as like socially, and then like having like a hard separation, because yeah. Like I think about like in a relationship, I don't really need someone who is like a girlfriend or something to engage with me in the way that I need someone online that I'm talking about anime with to engage with me in. In fact, mm-hmm. I would rather them engage with me in a different way. Like, I don't mind. I want someone to challenge me when it talking about anime. I want someone to challenge me and like get emotional and like heated about it in a way that like is transformative, where like you can learn something.
Mm-hmm.
In like a relationship, I don't want that, right? I don't need to like be in a fight when I come home. I don't need to fight for my life every second of the day. In fact, I would just rather not talk.
Right. Yeah.
So there's like the separation of needs, right? And I don't need. I try to imagine like having both in like one setting. And it's like, I guess that would be nice, but like, I don't really need it. That's not what I want or I'm searching for.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes with like work and my friends and stuff and the relationships I have outside of anime and just anime discussion in general. I've just developed this hard distinction between my hobby and like my personal life.
Yeah, that's weird. That is kind of weird. I have not developed as hard of a distinction. Like for me, it's more so like I become more open with my interests to my coworkers, and like my sense of humor, generally speaking. Like I've known them long enough that they are now adjusted to the fact that I will just like come up to them and say something that makes no sense, and they're just like, "Yep, that's something he does every morning when he comes to see me. God damn it." No, I'm not fucking that annoying. So yeah, I don't really maintain like that degree. I think it's probably also like it helps with the fact that like I'm working with people like generally my same age. People like in like they're like
most of my coworkers are younger than me.
That may also kind of, well, that's kind of the thing though, is like if I was like in my like 40s, 30s or 40s, I wouldn't be like chumming it up as the kids say, with people in their 20s. I don't think. I'd probably be more like,
I mean, I could chum it up in like a platonic way. Like, I,
yeah. Like, well, actually, like one of my coworkers the other day came to my desk, and we were actually like asking me like, well, yeah, how'd your anime convention go? And I was just telling him like the stuff that I did. I was like, oh yeah, I got to see you know, these people from this animation studio called Trigger. They were here promoting the show called Panty and Stocking. And then I realized that sounds insane. I need to explain this in so fast. It was like, a raunchy comedy about angels that fight demons, angel cops that fight ghosts.
See, you do this. I avoid doing this because, like, I'm like, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody yeah. cares about what the fuck I want to talk about. Like, why am I gonna bother them?
I'm like actively like bringing it up and like telling them about it. It's like usually someone will just ask me about it, and that's like the situation.
Yeah, but I usually just assume like if someone asked me about it in that kind of setting, I would assume they're just being polite and they just want to hear like, mm-hmm. oh, it was cool, or oh, it sucked. Like, someone fucking didn't shower and like
someone fucking died. I saw
jumped off a bridge
brutally. Brutally beheaded in front of me in my life.
Yeah, they want to hear something interesting or just it was cool. Like,
I was like, do you know if like what our medical insurance covers psychiatric care? Because that really fucked me up, honestly.
So I just I always work under that assumption. So like, yeah. I just don't ever talk about it.
Right.
And I would rather avoid setting up a situation where they would ask me about it or feel like they are feeling obligated to ask me about it. It's like, oh, well, he's really interested in this stuff, so I should try to be nice and engage with him in it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. very self-conscious about that kind of thing, I guess. So I just avoid mm-hmm. it.
No, I will go full autism. Like, someone brought up, I was at a birthday party once with some friends, and they were like talking about something. And I think Angel's Egg came up. I'm like, oh yeah, Angel's Egg. Yeah, the director's evil. And they're like, why do you say that? I'm like, oh god, I gotta explain this. So I just started ranting about Mamoru Oshii for like 10 minutes.
Everyone, it's like that fucking image where like all the people are at the party holding the red Solo
cup
staring
around
at you.
Yeah.
This is that.
That's probably just a scene out of like Blue Blazes, honestly.
This is similar to us, like we're Hideaki Anno's like, oh, this is a Miyazaki's latest work or something, and she's like, who's Miyazaki? And he just looks just like staring at the TV like
a disgusting look.
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess I'm less self-conscious, but if anything, I've just kind of accepted the fact that I'm weird and my coworkers know that I'm fucking weird. And
well, it made me realize the other day, I'm like, I've completely like nerfed myself when it comes to, because like, because I have like that filter always on, it actually like makes me slower to respond to things. Because I was thinking about it back when I didn't have an interest in anime and just had like regular normie interest, I just would cut up and make jokes all the time.
Yeah.
And like,
okay.
I think that's why like people generally liked me more in high school. Because like, I'd be in fucking class and like fucking. The band director would be like, what time do we get out of here? I'm like, not soon enough. And he's just like, what the fuck? You fucking asshole kid.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, there was that level of it. Like, I feel like I was more quick-witted, I guess. Like, I could just spout off shit because I didn't have, like, hobbies that was, like, trying to, like, not bother people with, I guess. So, like, now, like, whenever someone says something, there's like this layer or level of like, how should I respond? Am I in scenario A or scenario B? Oh, this would be funny. And then like at the time I get to that point, it's like the timing has passed. So I'm like, fuck.
You've like developed like a form of like time displacement autism itself. Like...
But I don't have that problem if like, I'm not worried about it, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just like whatever. I talk about say whatever I want, but like in a setting where I'm like worried about saying the wrong thing, then it's like, oh fuck. Oh, that would be funny to say. That was like 20 minutes ago now. Never mind.
That is like definitely like a thing that I face where it's like for me, it's very much a situation of like I'm either like not saying anything or I am just saying everything, no filter, basically. So like if it's like a event at work, and there's like a bunch of people around here, and they're like people that I'm not really familiar with, or I don't really talk to all that much, and we're like, you know, just interacting generally speaking, I'm like, okay, I don't know how to handle this situation, because my only mode of like social interaction is go. and that helps in certain situations, like when I was on that Anime Summit podcast, or like when I was meeting like the people from the R Anime Awards Discord at Otakon and stuff, where like that's a situation where I can be very much more boisterous and outspoken and just like cracking jokes and saying weird shit all the time, because that's just like that's the social setting. And if I'm not in a social setting like that, I'm just like I'm kind of locked up and not really doing a whole lot.
I feel like that Anime Summit podcast is an interesting comparison, like, because we were both on it. Granted, yeah. I was on it 3 years ago now, so I'm probably a bit better as far as like being on a podcast in general. Maybe more so like when I was on fucking Is the Order a podcast or whatever. But that is a very interesting scenario where like me and you were put into similar, pretty much almost identical scenarios, really. And like the way that we like responded to it is much different.
Yeah.
Like I just like,
whereas I was like,
I'm naturally very,
I was like
just
drinking
like
the entire time, and they're like, that was awesome, we gotta have you on like again. I'm like, dog, hell yeah, let's fucking go. You guys are the fucking best, you know. Shit faced.
See, I don't drink alcohol, so that's another problem. I don't have the social crutch.
It doesn't help all that much for me, honestly.
It's because you're an addict. It's alcoholic.
No,
I just need to function.
I'm adjusted. I'm fucked. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because like I am very naturally just like if I'm in a group that I'm not familiar with, I will just kind of like step back and just kind of be like, okay, let me feel the vibe out. And like, I'll look for a spark to like kind of put my foot in. And if it never happens, it could be like literally 6 months and never happened, like in some circles I've been in. And I'm just like, oh, well, I guess I'm just known as the guy that never talked in that group forever.
Oh, no. Like it took me like maybe like a year. I think it was like the moment that like my coworkers warmed up to me was what I've described in detail, a plan that Meta and I had come up with to destroy the Mona Lisa.
Oh yeah, like, I remember.
Because that was just like the result of like Meta and I just talking in VC one night, and eventually just concocting that. We were literally like, I don't know if I should be describing this actually on the podcast. I might have to cut this out for the Patreon portion. I really don't want to be describing a crime and how to commit that crime. Although I think we also looked it up, the greater crime would just be getting access to the 50, like having a 50 caliber rifle in France would carry a harsher penalty than destroying the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, but there's like greater ramifications for the Mona Lisa, I guess. Like if you want to do it,
yeah. No fuck the Mona Lisa. The Mona Lisa is a shitty fucking pain. Like, have you been to the Louvre? Have you seen like where like the room that the Mona Lisa is inside? There's like all of these other gore, it's like this tiny ass fucking painting, and there's all these other gorgeous works of art in the same fucking room. And yeah, it's like you go out to the next fucking room, there's a Mona Lisa dedicated gift shop, and you look up and there's even more like insane works of art hanging above them, and I'm like, fuck the Mona Lisa.
I don't share your hatred of the Mona Lisa, because I generally just like Da Vinci as an artist in general.
Sure, but that's like, it's like so overrated.
I'm not gonna argue. I don't really care. I don't care who's, like, as far as like art, who's over. I'm not gonna be like, ah, fuck it, Picasso versus. I don't care. But like I do. Like, I've seen, like, I've been to, like, National Gallery in London, and seen like the charcoal drawings he's done. And like, I have like a really, like, it is very, there's a very profound moment in like seeing something like that in person. We were like, fuck, like, even if it's just like an unfinished little fucking charcoal sketch he did, I'm just like, holy shit. This is like 400 years old. This has survived through two world wars, fucking how much, countless events in history. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It transcends like actual fucking like time. I don't know. It's hard to really like. I mean, that's a thing that happens with just thing, old things in general. So it's not just like,
art
or whatever. But yeah, I don't hate the Mona Lisa. I don't have this like,
I
have a Figma of the Mona Lisa.
You do? Oh, that's fucking disgusting. Actually, I can't fucking believe it. God, I hate it so much. Is it, you know what? Is there a Mona Lisa Funko? If there's a Figma, there has to be a Mona Lisa Funko Pop, right?
I don't know. The Figma thing is like their desktop museum line or whatever. I got it mainly for the Kira, Yoshikage Kira Part 4 JoJo figure for the meme or whatever.
No, this is like a fucking Parks and Recreation Funko Pop. So no, there is no Mona Lisa Funko Pop
yet. Womp womp.
That's the one piece of shameless commercialization that they have not fucking used. This mid looking, she doesn't even have any fucking eyebrows, this dumb looking bitch. I swear to God, what, like, fucking dumbass cunt.
Why are you so upset?
I fucking hate the Mona Lisa, dude. I hate it so much.
Jeez. Well, we could have used like a transition into talking about Lars and Real Girl, but we didn't get one, so
no, that's the hard transition. That's long past now. Now it's me venting about how much I fucking hate this painting. It's not even, it's like a small ass painting. Like, what is it? 30 inches by 21 inches.
Listen, it's not about the size of the painting, all right? It's about the how you use it, okay? Fucking size queen bitch.
You know, do you want to know how it's fucking used? They have it on a fucking wall that you can't even fucking get close to see it because of all the dumb fucking tourists just taking a picture of it. And it's like, why? It's all, you've seen this before. Why?
You want to talk about,
you're not even like, you're not even getting particularly close to, you're like 15 feet away. What are you, you're not even like getting close enough to like really admire like the detail and like texture of it. God, fuck.
Lars and the Real Girl was a good movie.
It was. I love that movie.
It's interesting to like compare that to just the general like moe kind of works.
You kind of it unintentionally, like very unintentionally, like invites that kind of like analysis of it, just because of the subject matter.
Unintentionally, in the sense of like, it's not directly commenting on moe, but it's not unintentional. And it is very much dealing with the same sort of like psychology behind moe intentionally. Yeah. It's just, they have manifested differently in different cultures.
Right.
But Lars and Real Girl is like, I don't want to say enabling, but like, encourage, like it's a very positive toward this sort of thing, in the sense of like being understanding of like,
yes,
this is something that is like immediate and visual that is off-putting to people, but it is not so different from other things that other people have going on in their lives that you just don't see immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she even is used in that way in the film of like, highlighting other people's like insecurities and hang-ups and stuff like that.
We should maybe describe the movie, because it's not an anime. You're really gonna be like, what the fuck are they talking about? Lars and the Real Girl? What?
What do you mean? It's a popular movie.
It's not a popular movie. I think it's probably most well known because it is Ryan Gosling, and he has like the reputation as being like he's literally me. And then people post around the picture of him sitting next to Bianca, the sex doll. And they're like, oh, my God, he's literally me, making like this, like he has like this shitty mustache and this dopey fucking smile.
Yeah, this is like your favorite movie, so you can describe what happens.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a fairly like simple movie. It's basically about Lars, who is this, he's nice, but he's obviously very troubled and socially maladapted because like his mother died during childbirth, and like you get a sense that like his father was not necessarily the most like loving figure in his life either. And I think it's like a few years before the movie starts, like his father dies, and that seems to like really fucked him up even more. So he's just like a very like lonely person. He does not like people touching him. Like he says it causes him like a burning sensation, like physical contact. And what ends up happening basically is he ends up ordering a sex doll, a real girl online, and falls in love with it in like a very delusional state where he does not see her as like a sex doll. He sees her as like an actual person, essentially. And initially everyone is like confused and horrified, like everyone in the community, because it takes place in this small town in the Midwest, and everyone is initially like, oh, that's fucking weird, especially like his brother and his brother's fiance are like very horrified by it, because yeah, you would be fucking terrified if like a loved one had a mental health crisis like this.
As we all would.
It's not like a Judd Apatow like raunchy comedy or anything like there is comedy in the movie, but it's not like punching down or making fun of Lars in any capacity. Because what ends up happening is like the whole community ends up really like rallying around Lars and Bianca and end up like propping Bianca up as like they get her more involved in the community. Like towards the end of the film, she's like elected to the school board and stuff. She's volunteering at the hospital. It's just a very like wholesome, like feel good movie about Ryan Gosling falling in love with a sex doll. And I would highly recommend everyone go watch. It's like free on Tubi. It's only like an hour and 40 minutes, and it's a wonderful movie.
Watch it and then go watch the trailer that people were shown in back in 2007. And you will realize why no one watched this movie.
Yeah.
I actually remember watching the trailer. Like, I remember getting the trailer on like TV and shit. And I was like, wow, this looks terrible. It's like another 40-year-old virgin shit.
I could not fault anyone for watching the trailer and being turned off from the movie, because it does not sell the movie well at all, especially like tonally, because again, it's a very low-key movie overall, very like slice of life, just kind of like fly on the wall kind of thing. It's not like a dumb sex comedy like you would almost like expect it, a movie about a guy falling in love with a sex doll, to be.
Yeah, it's kind of devoid of sexuality in it, honestly.
Yeah. Well, they make like a few jokes about her being anatomically correct and stuff, but it's not like, yeah,
it's more used to like highlight, you know, the kind of disgust of like, what is he doing with a sex doll, more so than actually being sexual.
Yeah.
Honestly, the people around him fucking objectify her in a sexual sense more than he does.
Yeah. Well, you get that funny conversation at like, it's like a Christmas party or New Year's party where they're talking. Like Lars is talking with like some of his coworkers, and his coworkers are like making these like crass comments like about her and like objectifying her, but they're making these crass comments as if she is like a real person that could be objectified. It's like humanization through objectification. It's fucking bizarre.
Well, I think the funniest part is like the comments, like they're doing like the stupid water cooler type fucking commentary comments. Yeah. Like, I wish I had a wife that wouldn't talk.
Yeah, it's like, but like that, it's like that's really crass and fucked up, but it's also like very accepting and wholesome in a way you wouldn't really expect. And obviously, because of the subject matter of the movie, it draws very like overt comparisons to, you know, concepts of moe or movies like Her. Or something recently, like a Bokusuma and stuff, where you have...
Well, interestingly, like, I feel like Her was, like, kind of more accepting of that sort of relationship. I feel like Lars and Real Girl is not... a Moe type movie in the sense of like a Her or a Bokusuma or anything like that.
Well, no,
that
because, is like, because Lars's relationship with Bianca is not it. That's not like a Moe.
There's no performativity. There's performativity in the sense of like, he is having to eat the food that she's eating to like maintain the delusion that he has.
Right. But that again, that's just like a mentally ill delusion thing.
Right.
Whereas really the performativity is the rest of the community who are doing all of these things. These people are not experiencing a delusion, but they are still operating in a certain way and treating Bianca as a real person. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with any of them. Like they still have like that understanding that Lars does not, because Lars is, you know, delusional. So it's not like, yeah, it's not like a direct like one-to-one kind of thing. Like the very obvious reading is like Lars is an otaku and the movie is about like otaku graduation in some sense, because he eventually gets like a real girlfriend at the end of the movie. Spoilers. But that's like a very like surface level reading, and I think it's the more salient one is like how the community gets involved. I think we actually discussed this very briefly when Galbraith was on, and we talked about Lars and the real girl, and like again, it's like how the community gets involved in animating her, and if anything, it's like closer to something like VTubing in that sense, because I think we were talking about it in like a similar conversation or that was a similar topic that we were discussing, which is like, I think that's like the more interesting aspect of the movie essentially.
I think it was interesting that I didn't expect for it to be so focused in on the sort of toxic masculinity aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, it's about like he directly just asks his brother, like, how did you know when you were a man or an adult or whatever? And like, it's about like that performance. Is it sex? and it was interesting that like that is the core kind of through line of it, because it is all about him and his relationship with his brother. Like, he doesn't want to go interact with his brother because he realizes his brother is kind of withdrawing from him and doesn't really want to deal with it, right? Like, he senses that.
Yeah.
And the only reason that it's even being brought up and engaged with is because his brother has a wife now who is, like, trying to kind of reach out to him.
Yeah.
And so he sees
Lars is very emotionally removed in a very different way from his brother. It's much more, like... It's unmasculine, but it's still touching on like those similar kinds of things where like Lars doesn't really open up to people. Lars doesn't like people touching him. He even sees like his brother's wife, like the way that she like, you know, like wants to touch people or like comfort people and stuff as like insecurity on her part, essentially.
It is interesting how like forward thinking it is, really, because it's like it's taking a look at this concept of the toxic masculine thing of like with bottling up all your feelings, don't showing emotion or intimacy or whatever, and just kind of saving that for your partner or whatever, and letting women do all the work or whatever in terms of emotional weight baggage, and kind of takes that to the logical extreme. It's like, okay, well, so then what happens if you take somebody who was grown up in that environment by people who thought that way and don't have a female authority figure or whatever for them to kind of like engage with intimacy with? And Lars is kind of like this extreme version of that, where really him getting the real girl doll is him using that as a medium for him to engage with like his brother and his family, because he sees like his brother has his wife who is like helping him open up and like reaching out to other people. He doesn't have the means to get a girlfriend or a wife or he's not at that point in his life yet. He can get that. And so he wants to open up to people and get to that point. But how do you do that if you're under this oppressive, like crushing idea that like feminine, like intimacy is wrong or something and only can be done with like a significant other? if you don't have a significant other. And so he gets the real girl doll to be that and acts as a medium, basically meeting his family and like his brother and his wife where they are at, with a stand-in sort of for that sort of partnership.
It enables Lars to be able to enter. It gives something that he can just interact with other people in general. Like, because like at the start of the movie, he's like, he doesn't even really want to eat dinner with them. Like, he has to be fucking like tackled and forced to.
Yeah.
Whereas when Bianca shows up, he's like, his brother opens up the door and Ryan Gosling is like leaning up against the door with like this cocky smile and stuff. He's like, yeah, I met someone. And like, oh, that's great. What the fuck? They're so excited and happy, and then you get the hard cut to him sitting on the fucking couch with the fucking sex doll. And it also ties back into like Lars, like, again, being very averse to like touch and stuff, but like he's okay with like making physical contact with Bianca because
she's not real.
Exactly. But like as we see, like Lars becomes more sociable. He also becomes more comfortable, like with touching other people. Like he's like, there's this girl in his office that like they have this like back and forth thing, and the girl eventually ends up getting with like some other guy, and like he goes up to Lars and like they shake hands, and the other guy is like, "Damn, hell of a grip, huh?"
Yep.
oh god, and like Lars is like trying to like do this like tough guy thing as well. So
you got that autism riz.
We really have to like emphasize like what a good performance this is from Ryan Gosling, by the way.
It is
just like, yeah, just like there's some scenes in this where I'm like, holy, like the scene where he's working with the doctor, the psychologist woman. And they're like sitting in like the doc, like her office, and she's like touching him. That sounds wrong. She's like trying to like gauge like how much pain Lars feels and stuff. And like when she goes to like touch him like on like the like neck, he just like reacts in like a completely like believable, like that was like a sharp pain he just fucking experienced. Honestly, yeah, the movie is like worth watching just for that performance. Good performances all around. I think what we were saying though is like it's a very easy movie to analyze. Like you watch it and you're like, I understand. I get it's a very like you get like the different like visual motifs and stuff, like Lars and like the blanket that his mother made while she was like pregnant with him and stuff, and he like keeps that on him and like almost like all times up until the end of the movie and stuff. There's like a lot of just like very like stuff that you can easily intuit.
It is interesting to compare it to other works, though, because it is like it does challenge Moe stuff in terms of like, is it an escapist tool? Because like the whole communal aspect of it is removing that aspect from Lars being able to like use her as an escapist tool.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I just want to use her whenever I want, and they're like, you know, they've incorporated her into the community in a way to like help him open up and be brought in to the fold. Yeah. And they're like, what do you mean? She's her own person. She's got her own life. Did you check her schedule? And he's kind of like,
yeah,
having to learn these things through this sort of medium.
Which again, like speaks to like the delusion aspect of it and why like Moe isn't really a delusion. No one is getting into fights in their car with their waifu and not be profoundly mentally ill. That's just not something that happens.
I feel like it's speaking more to the, again, the toxic masculinity thing. Cause like a lot of people, I feel like grow up and think like, oh, I'm going to get a girlfriend. She's going to solve all my problems.
It's like a very like trad wife thing essentially as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's pushing back on that. Cause they're like, look, this is not like an escape. Like the, people aren't just going to solve all your problems. You can't just have access to them 24/7.
Yeah.
Like if that is what you're wanting, you're just never going to find it. Like you are going to have to find it in a fantasy. Essentially, it's never going to be manifested into the real world, and you're never going to be accepted into a community that way, kind of thing. So I think that kind of thing is very interesting Even if, like, you know, a lot of, like, we've talked about, like, Bokusuma in the past and, like, her and stuff, and, like, how that is very sort of accepting and bringing into the fold of people who do have these sort of asymmetrical relationships, or I guess that's the best way to put it, where it's like, you know, you are in a performative moe sort of relationship with something. This is very much taking, like, the step before that, where it's like basically what they would have been talking about 20 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever, in the same vein. It's just they haven't gotten to that step yet. Of course, that was a different time as well, where you didn't really have the beginnings of, like, AI and stuff like that, where it's like, you are going to have to be dealing with this at some point, where people are going to be, we see it now with fucking ChatGPT and shit. People are falling in love with ChatGPT.
Well, no, I mean, fucking the fucking Grok girl that looks like Misa from Death Note.
That's, I mean, that's, like, the more cynical version, but people, like, just fell in love with, like, ChatGPT when it was just talking to them and glazing them up, because it's, like, their first exposure to somebody that, like, seems like something that is a person reacting to you, making you feel seen, I guess, right? Like, ChatGPT, like, you say something and ChatGPT is like, oh, yes, this, this, and this, I've drawn these threads, and you're like, wow, this is the first time anyone's ever noticed this about me, and, like, you form this parasocial relationship with it that is essentially moe. That is what that sort of performativity and waifu shit is.
It's just like a more advanced thing than what you would get in out of like a dating sim or something. Now we can do
it's one-sided,
essentially.
It's almost like more insidiously one-sided, in a sense where it's like otaku culture understands, like, moe, it is baked into the term moe that this is not real. Nobody that is engaging with, like, a waifu or that kind of culture, unless they actually do have a, like, are delusional or have a mental condition, thinks that their waifu is real. It is an implicit understanding that this is not a real relationship. It is purely performative.
Yeah. If anything, that can be a point of distress for some people.
It can. It's also, like, at least showing an awareness of reality. Whereas like ChatGPT is almost more insidious and, like, problematic in a way, because people that aren't necessarily ready to engage with stuff on that level are kind of being flashbang, booby trapped and caught into this relationship emotionally. Like, they're like, wow, I'm being seen. What is this? And then aren't really prepared to deal with it, because they haven't really been, there's not been, like, this sort of thing before. Like, fucking talking to Smarter Child on AIM or whatever the fuck, like, these chat bots that we used to have is not the same as talking to ChatGPT, as far as, like, how advanced it is as a language model. And there's not really been much media that has prepared people to, like, have, like, you get the robot stuff, but people kind of feel like have kind of come on the side of, like, oh, we should just treat robots like people. And it's like, that might be fine.
Or not, when we get because to we've that also point. Now invented, like, a weird form of racism against robots.
Yeah, that, well, I feel like that's a reaction to, like, the ChatGPTs, because people, it's happening, like, faster than people anticipate, I think. And it's because we're in that kind of uncanny valley sense, where we haven't gotten, like, Blade Runner 2049 levels of robots walking around, where it's easier to accept them as people. You are dealing with people that have this weird asymmetrical parasocial relationship with ChatGPT and are posting on Reddit like, oh, they've updated ChatGPT and my husband is gone. Now it's, like, real and weird to people. So now it's like, now you do get the clanker stuff and all that bullshit. It's just, I think people would benefit if we had done more stuff like Lars and the Real Girl and Her, like, I guess anime has been able to explore with, like, that parasocial,
like in a video girl eye or something like that.
Yeah. Like, if we had more stuff like that, people would have kind of been more ready, I feel like, for this level of stage, where it's like, you're gonna have people that are more easily influenced, that are going to be dealing
it's a matter of media literacy almost, and at that point we've education systems have been under fire for the last 20 years in terms of stuff like that. So we're just kind of that's just kind of fucked in general.
Yeah, it's hard because like I understand like the initial sort of reaction of like just wanting to stigmatize it, and then you know obviously they do the clanker thing or whatever. That is, I think, like a comedic.
Literally everything about it, like using, like people being like, "No, we cannot use AI for anything." It's like, oh, what about helping to like identify can't? No, oh, we can't use it to save blood. No, oh, okay, sorry.
See, I've heard interesting arguments for that where they're like, we shouldn't do that because you were then like giving up like a level of agency that you were then giving them control over or something, whereas something like changes in the future, then you're kind of fucked because like you've now built this infrastructure around not doing that and you've given it to something else and you're now dependent on that kind of thing. So it's like there are a lot of interesting arguments in all directions, honestly. And I do understand, like you were saying, you're talking about from one side where it's like we just stigmatize AI in general. I'm saying like even people that don't necessarily stigmatize the uses of AI, but stigmatize just blanketly stigmatize these kind of relationships as being just like deviant and stuff. I understand that where it's like you just don't even want to engage with it. But like you are not preparing people to like then potentially have to engage with it. And so you do get people that aren't really ready for talking to like a ChatGPT and engaging with it as like an AI that's just like advanced. And they're going to be like, oh, this person sees me and I'm visible. It affirms all my thing, glazes me up. I feel like I'm in a relationship with them. And
man,
then
I think that stripper really does like me.
Exactly. It's that kind of thing. But like, it's worse because like strippers, you have to go to a strip club. You have to be old enough to go to a strip club. This is like kids can just go talk to ChatGPT. I don't know. There's a lot of
by ChatGPT is going to be a wild headline in a few years, and it's going to happen.
Just make that the title of the podcast: getting groomed by ChatGPT.
Kids getting groomed by ChatGPT.
It's a wild world out there.
Yeah.
People are, we are not preparing anybody for it.
This has been a wild episode. We've talked about a ton of different shit.
Yeah. And as we do.
Yeah. Hello. Welcome to the Weeb Crew.
No, we already did that.
Oh.
This is actually the third time we've done that. Actually,
is it the third time? Oh, fuck.
You did that joke after you did the introduction, and we were like, okay, this is the intro. And then you went and checked your emails, and then you did it again. So this is the third time.
Oh yeah, did I pay my rent?